Welcome to my monthly podcast series titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I blog about leading, living, and saging, or positive aging. I am passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. I also say I'm out to retire the word retirement. We are not retiring, but we're moving on to something else. And I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. Today I'm interviewing Reverend Pat Hertifer. Pat is a professional educator and a retired Unitarian Universalist minister who practiced her leadership in academic institutions, congregations, UUA staff and camps, conference centers, and interfaith communities over the past 40 years. As a certified saging leader, she is currently sharing her ministry with elders while engaging in service to future generations. Partner to Manfred for 55 years, mother to 4 adult children, and Oma to 7 grandchildren, Pat enjoys retirement living in the Lakes region of New Hampshire. Through her many decades, she has lived her passions of sharing stories around a campfire, engaging multi-generational spiritual growth, and participating in cross-cultural adventures and service learning. For more information on Pat, please refer to the bio attached to this podcast. Welcome to the series, Pat.
Oh, great to be here, Jan, with you.
I met Pat several years ago through Saging International, and I've always been impressed with her knowledge, creativity, and grace. Everything about Pat communicates wisdom, kindness, and a sense of curiosity. And so I'm very excited to be interviewing Saging International.
It was now over 20 years ago that I took a sabbatical. I went to Ghost Ranch in New Mexico with a stack of books like any good minister would go on a silent retreat on her sabbatical. And the top of the stack of book was a book called From Aging to Saging. I dove into that book and I thought, okay, this is where I need to dwell. I was 60 years old at the time that I read that, and Reb Zalman was asking the questions that I had, and then he shared his experience and what, you know, some of the answers he came up with. So I loved the book. Wow. I read it again and again and again and again, and I thought, I want to know this man. I want to go through this, was called Spiritual Eldering Institute. So right away contacted that, and a couple of years later, and you know, brought that to my Unitarian Universalists through my ministry there. And it has totally really affected my retirement life, or my refirement life, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of goes right into my next question, which is, how has your involvement changed your life?
Well, as a called minister to our faith, Unitarian Universalist, I loved the pastoral work. I loved the prophetic work. I loved the educational work. And I thought, I don't ever want to be uncalled from ministry. So transitioned from working at our UUA headquarters to retirement. Yet I knew I wanted to retire. But the more I delved into my training with saging, I thought, this is my new ministry. So I became untethered from the UUA and just took up saging as ministry, because I think truly it is, because it is using those skills of education, being with people as they develop their spirituality, to your own families and to the wider community or the world at large. So it totally took over my life after retirement. And I love doing the education programs or serving on the service committee of Saging International, attending our conferences, getting to know wonderful people like you and so many others in Saging International.
Well, that's true. I mean, I definitely consider the people and the people I've met as value. I mean, just that's value added for being involved. Well, you did mention some kind of activities that you're involved in for the purpose of spreading the, you know, Sage International mission. I definitely know you're, you know, involved in the service part. What other activities? You put on workshops. What else? Yeah.
Well, I love the educational component. I am really an educator at heart. And, you know, I love doing education programs with my own faith community. But one of the beauties of saging is that it's so interfaith. It encompasses all the wisdom traditions. So all those beautiful quotes in Reb Zalman's book, whether it's from a Sufi or a native elder or a humanistic psychologist or whatever, it adds another depth to your living. And so taking educational programs, workshops of a whole day or a half day, doing it in various contexts, whether in faith communities or academic institutions or Council on Aging, with young elders and frail elders, actually, it was such a mutual blessing and deepening of living life more fully at whatever age we are. And the tools and the practices we have through our saging curriculum are such beautiful tools, and I love to take them into all these various contexts.
Mm-hmm. No, that's excellent. Well, one thing I've always been impressed with and also intrigued, and I know you've described this before. I think I went to a session of yours at a conference, but I think you called it a camp for the cousins, or because again, I don't have any grandchildren yet, but it is something that I want to remember because I was just so kind of amazed by it. Can you describe kind of how you do that? And again, to me, it's saging work at a, you know, targeted towards family members, but at a very young age kind of thing, that intergenerational learning.
Oh, I'd love to. That's my favorite subject. So I have to say, first of all, I received a beautiful legacy from my grandma, Sophie. And she lived on a farm in northern Wisconsin. And we visited, my sister and I, for 2 months every summer for about probably 4 or 5 years. And there was no running water, no electricity, living very close to the land. And I loved being there. And I didn't have the words to describe what that experience meant to me as a 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old. But it was living close to the land and a sense of spirituality and a sense of connection with all living things. And I so much, when I grew up and found my life partner and had 4 children of our own, brought that experience to our family with our young children. And then I thought, okay, what is this retirement years bring, and the same opportunity to bring that to our grandchildren. And we have been blessed with 7 grandchildren pretty close in age. So I invited them to come up to our place in New Hampshire. And we're sort of on the shores of the Pemigewasset River, and we look into the beautiful White Mountains. And my husband and I said, well, let's just try this, and we'll just tell stories of how we met and who our grandparents were. And so we told those stories. So I told them about Grandma Sophie and what I did there, and my husband told the story of his Opa Heinrich and what he did in Germany. And the kids loved the stories. And then, of course, they played in the water, and we had sang songs and told stories around the campfire. And they said, can we do this every summer? And we said, sure. And so it became a passion of Manfred and I. But it also, I think, and this is the saging leader, the minister in me, that helped each of our grandchildren cope with their life at that time. So we intentionally chose a theme every summer. So one time it was home. Another theme was dreams. Another was gratitude. So two of our families went through the experience of a divorce.
Oh.
So finding home was a big question to them. So hearing stories, acting out some of the things, building our own little homes out of huge cardboard cartons, making it feel like a home wherever you are, and they took them home. And then, you know, so it helped them, I think, and they reflect that back to me many years later, that indeed, you know, it was a seminal part in their dealing with those difficult years, but also the bonds that they made across being cousins to each other.
Right.
So my daughter has one child, and it's a daughter. All the other families have two. So then she feels like she has siblings. And that cousin connection, even to this day, is so strong. So we don't have cousin camp in the week-long experience that we used to have, but we have them for a weekend, and they'll talk about, you know, what they did and what we experienced together, but also those questions that they still have now. And that's the beautiful relationship that we bring to each other, and that's why it's such a mutual blessing. Learning from their curiosity at their stage of life and what comes next and what are their questions, and also sharing what we have learned over our long life experience and mistakes we've made and joys we've had and, you know, some wisdom that we can pass on to them. So it's a, you know, sort of our trademark experience in our elder years, and we love it.
Oh, I just think it's wonderful. And it's a model that, you know, I dream about, you know, being able to kind of follow. I'm just curious, how old were the kids when they started, and about how old were they when you kind of stopped the, I think you said it was a week, they would typically come for a week or?
Right. Yeah. So that's how we initially set it up when we were active elders and could do all the, you know, the waterfront activity and climb mountains and And so our youngest at that time was four, and the oldest at that time was maybe what, 8, 9.
Okay.
And then we had it for, oh, I guess 6 years here in New Hampshire, a week long. And then we had two more grandchildren came along. So the initial five started the cousin camp.
Okay.
And then the other two are slowly easing in. We took a break one summer when we all went to Germany and celebrated Munford and my 50th wedding anniversary.
Nice.
And after that, we came back, and I said to the three older ones who were becoming teenagers, I said, you know, if you want this to go on, it's going to be your leadership. So I'm ready to back you up. So what? Pick a theme, tell a story, you know. So we did that for maybe 2 years. But now they're seniors in high school, and they're looking up to college. And so my only passion now still is the younger ones are 6 and 10. So I still want to do some semblance of it for them with whatever older cousins still want to come. So maybe it's a weekend. Last summer we did a weekend.
Sure.
But it's always talking about issues that matter for them.
Yeah.
And trying to make sense out of life as we're trying to make sense out of life. And then just the mutual blessing of where we are in our various life journeys.
Yeah. Excellent. I just love that. I really do. Well, thank you for sharing all that. Over your 20 plus years of engagement with Saging International, has your focus changed? And if so, how?
Yeah, I love this question because I was initially asked that in another interview and really had to think hard because I've always had this call to service. You know, ever since my young years, but also my call to ministry is always being of service. looking at the big issues of our time and addressing them in some way with my thoughts or skills or organizing ability. So, you know, I did a lot of rallies and protests and things like that in my early saging years, and that activist passion was very strong in me. There's always something that needs our attention, whether it's, you know, big money in politics or it's the environmental justice that really demands a national stance and standing up for what we believe. So I've been active on that front, but more and more lately, with my energy not as focused on the national or the international, but looking at my family and doing a lot of family ministry. So my younger brother died last year, and my sister has gone through various bouts of illness. So being of service to my family members, to beloved friends who are now facing the end of their life, this is where my service now is focusing. And my husband just crossed the threshold into his ninth decade. So that horizons of life is, you know, coming closer to our end of life.
Uh-huh.
And we need to be there and focus on that, and being present and living fully to that part of our life. So it's shifting somewhat, although I'll still write letters and still, you know, call my Congress people and
right.
tell them my thoughts.
Right. That's great. Yeah, that's great. We actually, as you were describing that, I went to see Joan Baez. She's calling it her farewell tour. And I went to hear her in concert. And then I've read several interviews with her after that concert. And, you know, she kind of expressed similar things. But the image of Joan Baez is coming to my mind as you're describing yourself, and you're very, actually, could be soul sisters, I think.
Oh, she was really one of my heroines. She and Pete Seeger. Oh, right. My gosh, how they lived their life. Oh, I'm right there with them.
I know. I agree with you. Well, given, you know, your life experience and all you've been through and your experience with Sage International, what else should I have asked you that our listeners, you know, need to know, either about saging or about living fully, or, you know, maybe some of the ahas that you've, you know, what kind of wisdom do you want to leave my listeners with?
Well, I think the elders are changing.
Okay.
You know, 20, 25 years ago, when we retired, we were looking at our own legacy and looking at our families and maybe our congregations and communities. I think the elders, the boomers that are retiring now, are really looking at being of service to future generations. So it's not their own lives that they want to, they're concentrating on. It's the lives of their grandchildren. And they see the quality of life diminishing. So they're in these activists for environmental justice or for including all people in the human family. So there is, you know, I think the elders are rebelling is what I've called it, and paying attention to the big issues and calling all of us to pay attention to those big issues as we go about our elder years. So I think, you know, Saging International in focusing on our educational programs is good, but I think we really need to focus on our service and our service as activists and our service as spiritual elders. And it has to be, I think, a blend of bringing our spirit to service and, you know, having our service be spirit-filled. So I think we have some examples that our service committee has developed our qualities of sages in service, and we can all hone those skills, but also be in the public square, use our moral voice. And, you know, as Maggie Kuhn said many years ago, what have we got to lose? Let's stick our neck out, you know?
Right, exactly.
let's make our opinions known, because we do have wisdom to share. Mm-hmm. And planet is not in the best shape, and we really need to name some of the problems that exist, but also some ways that we can address those. So, you know, I hope our voices, our moral voices, will be heard in the public square as elders and to claim our responsibility. I think Reb Zalman really called us to that responsibility of using our moral voice in the public square.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. So, well, that is, you've given us much to think about, and you know, as I said, this podcast series is called Becoming a Sage, and you've worked very hard at doing this, and we will continue to think about what you've said so that we can make the rest of life the best of life. So, Pat, I just want to thank you again. It's an honor to know you, and thank you for making the time for this, and I know I've learned a lot, and I think others will too when they listen to this podcast. So thank you.
Well, thank you. It was fun.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.